Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we're joined by Catholic Mindset Coach Kylie Hine. Kylie will be discussing how knowledge of the temperaments can help us build up our family relationships. Kylie, thank you so much for being on the Ferris Love Podcast.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Mary Grace.
So we'd love, as our audience would love to get to know you a little bit. Can you please tell us a little bit about what you do as a Catholic mindset coach and how that, you know, kind of has transformed and now you talk about temperaments and all that?
Absolutely. So I am a certified coach through Metanoia Catholic, and temperaments is one of their foundational things that they really train their coaches in, which is really beautiful. And I specifically, or more primarily, work with Catholic women who want to deepen their faith and decrease their anxiety and overwhelm. So I was a teacher for 13 years. I lived the busy, chaotic life of teaching and head coaching sports and caring for kids, all of the busyness. So I know that world very well, and I know how overwhelming it can be. So my mission is really to help women understand how to declutter their mind and make space for God. Because when we make space for God, everything else falls into proper order. And we learn how to set down the things that are really heavy that we're carrying around that we're actually not supposed to be taking on, which we'll talk about more here with the temperaments, which temperaments are more prone to take those things on, and how we can kind of set those down and listen to what God is actually calling us to do. And a little bit of the mindset piece, I was a math teacher, so I was fascinated by mindset and why some students thought that they could do math and some students, by the time they got to me in middle school or high school, were completely shut off and thought, this is impossible for me. I cannot do it. So that psychological piece in there really pulled me in. And I also do a spiritual direction component as well, because I'm almost completely certified in spiritual direction. So I always pull in a prayer aspect to my coaching as well.
Wow, that's great. I couldn't relate to your students that came into math not knowing, thinking I can't do it. No, but that's great. Okay, let's just dive right in then to those temperaments. There are four temperaments. What are they? And where do they come from? How do we know about them?
Yes. So the idea of temperaments has been around since about 300 BC. So think time of Hippocrates. And it was based on degrees of excitability. I feel like the temperaments are really getting a new life right now. Temperaments are not your personality. More specifically, they are your natural inclination of how you will respond to something. So this is a lifelong thing. This is like your natural matter. It's how we react to things and our natural tendencies, as opposed to something like our character, which is our mental and moral qualities kind of evolved by our environment and our circumstances. So that's a little bit about the history and what they come from. Temperaments are thought to be hereditary. We have all four of them inside of us. So if we were to go through and talk about the temperaments, you're like, well, that one kind of sounds like me. That one kind of sounds like me. Yes, because you have all four. Jesus was the perfect culmination of all of the virtues of all four temperaments and none of the vices. That is the ideal. That is what we are striving for. Mm-hmm. However, one of these temperaments is going to be higher, if you were to think of them on a scale, than the others for each of us. And typically we will have a second that is higher than the other two as well. So we call those our primary temperament and our secondary temperament. And it is actually a little more useful to be a blend than to be 100% of one kind of temperament. So these four temperaments are choleric, sanguine, melancholic, and phlegmatic. Cholerics are more of an extroverted temperament. They are quick to react to things and slow to move on. They're very results-oriented, and their temptation is anger. So if you can think of that person who something just sets them off really quick, it might come out as vocal anger, or it could be an internal anger or a frustration. And their desire is to be in control. So when things feel out of control, that is very challenging for them. Cholerics are often your leaders. They are problem solvers. They're very goal driven. They like to get things done. If we were to look at saints, St. Paul was a choleric. Mother Angelica, not a saint yet, but Mother Angelica was a choleric. St. Ignatius of Loyola, St. Francis of de Sales. These are your choleric people. Sanguines, these are your fun, bubbly, creative. We love sanguines. They're very optimistic. They are also quick to react, but that inclination or that reaction doesn't last as long. They're quick to move on to the next thing. So if they get angry or they get excited, that excitability isn't going to last for a very long time. They're very people-oriented. Their temptation is frills and fun. That's their desire. They are just your bubbly, fun, outgoing people. Give them a stage and they will thrive. Then we have the melancholic. The melancholic is slow to react and slow to move on. These people would probably self-identify as perfectionists. They're very quality-oriented. Their temptation is despair, because if things are not perfect, if other people are not living up to their ideal, that can be very difficult for them. These are very deep thinkers. We're in the time of Lent. Melancholics are known for their high level of mortification. So you might know a melancholic and you're like, oh, how can they give this thing up so easily? And I'm over here struggling. They might be melancholic and you might be sanguine. So your strengths are going to be very different. And then we have the phlegmatic. The phlegmatic is also more of an introverted temperament. They are slow to react, but they are quick to move on. These people, you will rarely, if ever, see them frustrated or angry. They are just cool and collected. They are very service-oriented. Their temptation is sloth. So sometimes they get dubbed, quote-unquote, the lazy temperament. That doesn't mean that if you're phlegmatic, you are lazy, but that can be your temptation, because your desire is to avoid conflict. You do not want to ruffle anybody's feathers. These people are amazing to have in your group because they just keep everyone very level-headed. And I forgot to mention some of the saints. So if we were to go back, sanguines, St. Peter, St. Teresa of Avila, those would be some of your sanguines. Melancholics, St. Therese of Lisieux is probably one of the most well-known. St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross would be another one. And phlegmatics, St. Thomas Aquinas is a really well-known phlegmatic. And if you were looking at the Bible, maybe Abraham or Queen Esther.
Okay, great. Wow, that was very thorough. I loved it. I'm curious, you mentioned that they are hereditary in the sense that we have all four of them to some capacity. Obviously, we have two of the higher ones. What are your thoughts on can someone, let's say someone is more prone to being melancholic, is there a possibility of like overcoming that or growing out of that? Or is it always going to stay that same level of, let's say, melancholy?
Yeah, this is such a great question. So our temperament is our temperament. This is how God created us. It is a beautiful gift. That doesn't mean that we don't grow in the virtues of the other temperaments and we don't work out of our weaknesses or our natural vices of our temperament. So if you were to look at some of these saints at the end of their life, you would likely have no idea what their temperament was, because they have grown in the virtues of all of them and they have tempered, so to speak, their weaknesses of their natural virtue, if that makes sense. So it's still our natural inclination. I am quick to react. I will always be quick to react, but I can learn, and through God's grace, I can begin to take a pause after that reaction and react outwardly in a different way. I can begin to have more peace. I can begin to become more patient as I grow with the Lord.
That's great. Okay, awesome. Because I think, yeah, some people hesitate with these things because they're like, wait, you're just putting me in a box and I don't believe that this is it.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that. Your temperament is not a box. This is not your identity. These words are not who you are. They are certain aspects of the way that you react to things. So we never want to put ourselves in a box. This doesn't mean that we can't change. These are not excuses to allow certain behaviors. it's really to help us self-identify and understand, to grow in that self-knowledge that St. Teresa always talks about is so important. We have to continue to grow in self-knowledge. This helps us become aware of what our triggers are, what we get angry about, what we kind of let slide by. And I think in families, in our relationships, I think this is where this shows up a ton, recognizing that not everyone responds the same way that I respond. And that is okay. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't expect them to respond the same way that I respond. Mm-hmm. And when we can learn that and accept that, everything gets better. It truly does. Everything gets better.
That's great. And I would love to kind of go into that. You mentioned families. So what could be some potential tensions that arise, let's say? So I love, okay, honestly, I love what you were saying about how it's an opportunity for you to grow in virtue based upon mm-hmm. knowing yourself. And so what are some tensions that could arise in family life, let's say just between husband and wife, based upon the different, their different temperaments? And have you ever met anyone who's kind of married someone who has the same temperament? I'm curious what that's
yes,
like.
Yes, me.
Oh, you did. Okay. Yes. I did not. I married a choleric. So
I'll describe both. Okay. So great. A really common one that comes up in coaching world is choleric and a phlegmatic. Those are opposing temperaments. So it's not believed possible for you to be primarily choleric, phlegmatic. That blend is not possible because they are exact opposites in terms of response time. So again, you could have traits that maybe fall under both, but you can't have that as your primary, secondary. So someone who is choleric, for example, let's say a choleric wife, she's very goal-driven. She likes to have structure. She likes to have things go a certain way. She wants to have the party plan. She wants to know how many people are coming. She wants to have everything put together. The phlegmatic husband is like, great, people are coming. Everything's fine. They are likely to procrastinate. It might be last minute. Everything is fine. Why do you need to know who's coming? People are coming. Just have food, right? And so this can cause a lot of frustration and tension. And the choleric is like, okay, they just need more motivation. They just need me to do this for them. They just need me to do this for them. And the phlegmatic can feel that intensity of their personality. And they begin to retreat because, again, the phlegmatic does not want confrontation. So the wife is getting angry. She begins nagging. The phlegmatic starts to close up and then doesn't want to do anything. They're like, I'm just fine. Do what you want to do. And the phlegmatic is not likely to set boundaries. They don't want to push back because, again, they don't want the confrontation. So they're going to avoid. So that's an example where that could come up in your marriage. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful pairing because you guys can learn so much from each other. But if you aren't aware that your spouse is wired differently, then all we see is the friction. And why won't they do what I want them to do? Why is this so difficult? Why can't we move forward? Why are they not motivated to do anything? Well, they just think differently. They need more time to think through things. They're not going to be quick to answer a question. They want to think through it. They like structure. They like routine. But again, if you're constantly on them about something, they are going to withdraw. I'll talk about the other opposing too. So melancholic sanguine, how this can show up is the sanguine, super bubbly, super excited, quick to move on to the next thing. Melancholics, they are very deep thinkers. They need time and space to process their emotions, to think about things. If they're upset, again, that impression lingers. They need to feel their feelings and go be upset, to go be sad, whatever it is. And the sanguine's over here like, oh my gosh, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up. How can I make you happier? How can I make you happier, right? Because that's just their natural state. And so the melancholic's like, oh my gosh, I just need time. I just need to decompress. And the sanguine's like, let's go have fun. Let's go do this. And so again, just recognizing you operate differently. Your ideal conditions are different. The sanguine wants the fun, new, exciting thing. The melancholic wants to sit and think. They might want to stay home and read a book instead of going to a party. That is okay. Mm, yeah. And then we have same temperament. So my husband and I are both primarily choleric. That doesn't mean that everything shows up the same way. It was fascinating to do a temperaments workshop with my husband because it really just opened my eyes to, oh, he does not have, he is not high in empathy. right? And so I'm choleric sanguine and I have some chronic illness. So when he hears me talk about something, sometimes I just want to talk and just say, hey, this is what's going on. And he's like, I don't know what you need from me. Right? Like, because he is that person, if something's wrong, work harder, figure it out, pull yourself out of it, mm-hmm. move forward. You know, he's not that person's like, oh, you're sick. What can I do for you? How can I help you? Yeah. And it's really just kind of become a joke in our family. We can talk about it. The other night, actually, we were having a conversation and I mentioned something about how I was not feeling well. And probably 5 minutes later, he's like, by the way, did you notice how empathetic I was? Like, did you notice I'm working on that? I'm working on just being empathetic and not just saying, suck it up. But it can be, and you see this with your kids too, a power struggle just because you both like to be in control. Mm-hmm. And so just recognizing that, okay, one of us sometimes is going to have to step back. We can't both be in control all of the time.
Yeah, I get that. That's great. I love this. This is a great conversation already. I'm just thinking of so many questions to ask. I love that. So this is, you just discussed with us like how temperaments can kind of clash or work together in the sense of marriage. How do parents go about starting to like understand their children's temperaments? And have you seen like, I mean, because there's the idea of nature versus nurture, you know, like mm-hmm. do the children, you know, and temperaments are, as you've said, like a part of our nature, just in regards to we have God-given, you know, mm-hmm. Virtues and abilities and things like that. How does that look with having children who potentially could have a totally different, like, let's say you're used to, okay, my husband's choleric. Great. I'm so used to handling clerics. I know what triggers, mm-hmm. what doesn't, what they're really good at. But my child is a sanguine and I'm not. I'm a melancholic. Yeah. It's like, what, how do you handle all of that? Like, what are some ways to first discern like your child's temperament? Because they're little and, you know, mm-hmm. how do you discern between just them knowing that this is just them growing up versus, okay, this could be a potential temperament thing?
Yeah. Well, I think especially if you have really young children, start with you first. Understand your temperament, understand your spouse's temperament, and then get just a basic understanding of other people's temperaments. When your kids are in the toddler years, you're going to see giant fluctuations, right? Is that them just having a tantrum or is that them, you know, an outpouring of something about their temperament? So I would suggest start with you first and then start with your spouse. Look at the relationships around you. Again, when you initially take a temperaments assessment, you'd be like, oh, well, that could be me. That could be me. But when you start to see, oh, that person's really high sanguine, that's what that looks like. I'm like that sometimes, but not like that, right? You can just kind of start to understand this person is primarily sanguine. I might have some sanguine in me, but it's not my primary temperament. Mm-hmm. And you'll begin to notice these things in your kids too. I think most of the time we can kind of self-identify once we understand the temperaments and we've gone through understanding the strengths, the weaknesses, the ideal conditions, the triggers, the motivations. Mm-hmm. However, there are assessments that you can take on behalf of your child based on how they typically respond in your house and in your home. For example, you might ask a question about sports. Like the person who is high choleric is probably going to be super competitive. The phlegmatics just might be like, eh, whatever, we'll play. You won. Good job. Mm-hmm. Move on. Mm-hmm. So you can identify that way. Metanoia Catholic does now have a temperament assessment for your children. Connie Rossini also has one. So you can just Google Connie Rossini temperament assessment. She has two books that are fabulous as well. So if you're looking at how to parent your child, she only has two of the temperaments out, but even if that's not your primary temperament, I still think they are worth the read because they are fantastic. Mm-hmm. That being said, once you start to identify if your child is different than you, know your triggers, know your ideal conditions. Mm-hmm. For example, my husband, as I mentioned, is choleric. Getting out the door on time on the days when he has to take the kids to school is a huge trigger for him because he wants to leave on time every time. Mm-hmm. My daughter and my son a little bit too, my daughter's sanguine, right? Mm-hmm. So she might be going to do the thing that you asked her to do, but then she's all, a toy and it was like, oh my gosh, this makes me so excited. I just want to finish this thing, or I just want to play with this, or I just want to create this, right? She gets distracted. I have done morning routine more often than my husband. And again, I'm very familiar with the temperaments. So I know my kid is sanguine. She's going to get distracted. She's going to be impulsive. She needs more time in the morning. I need to wake her up 15 minutes earlier than I think I need to, so that those distractions aren't a problem. We can redirect and we can still get out the door on time.
Yeah, that's good.
My husband, in his mind sometimes, is still like, this is how much time it should take them to get ready. I'm waking them up at this time and we should be ready to go at this time. Mm-hmm. So just, again, recognizing those triggers, recognizing what the inclination of your child may do, and just making space for it. Just adapting a little bit. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. You know, waking your kid up 10, 15 minutes earlier so that if they do get distracted, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like actually a great point too, because, you know, you mentioned the saints. By the end of their lives, you couldn't tell what temperament they had because they've already like been, you know, perfecting in their virtue and all that stuff. And so that idea of like, okay, you know your child well and you know where your child might struggle. And so you're actually helping them kind of overcome maybe those tendencies of their temperament to become more virtuous by waking up a little bit earlier, by recognizing, okay, I actually need this extra time. I love that. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on how families, parents, and even sibling among sibling, like, you know, brother to sister, can use their temperaments to build either, you know, more gratitude for each other or compassion. In regards to like understanding, you know, their talents, their skills based on their temperament.
Yeah. So something I did recently, which was so fun, I had a family reach out to me and say, hey, will you do the temperaments workshop with us as a family? So they have two teenagers, a 13-year-old and an 18-year-old. We met over Zoom. We did 2 one-hour sessions and we really just went through, again, the weaknesses, the strengths, the triggers, the motivations, the ideal conditions. And it's so incredible to hear families have conversations, to recognize, oh, that's why you do that.
That
is what you're really good at. And it was amazing because a week later, I reached out to the mom, just said, hey, how are things going? She's like, you would not believe the conversations that we have been having at the dinner table about everyone's strengths, about seeing where they thrive. And understanding when you have those conversations within your own family, what other people's triggers are, they can tell you something drives them crazy, right? And you can hear it a million times. But when you have a more intimate conversation around that thing and understand, oh, this is why it is so triggering to them, you're more aware of it. And so if I know that something is triggering to my spouse or something is triggering to my child, I can be more aware to try not to do that thing, even though it's my natural inclination, right? That's where I can start to grow in virtue. If I know that my sanguine child, when she's having a rough day, her ideal condition is that she needs to create, which she very much does. She will tell me if her schedule's too busy, mom, I just need time to play. I need time to go craft, right? I can make space for her to do that. Siblings can learn to make space for one another to do that. Oh, my sister doesn't want to play right now. She actually needs time to go to in her room for a little bit. I'm going to give her that space. And we can help cultivate that, especially if our children are younger. We can teach them, hey, this is what they need. Do you have a friend at school who maybe needs that? You know, if you have a friend who instantly gets angry all the time and 5 minutes later they come back to you and they're like, be my best friend, be my best friend. We can say, okay, this might be their temperament. I know that that's not the way that you're wired, but we just have to understand that other people are wired differently. And how can we love them where they are?
That's great. And it's giving them a benefit of the doubt too, especially for kids. I love that. I love that because I think sometimes children just have the, you know, they're children, obviously. They're not fully developed.
Right.
So they automatically think this or that, you know, and they don't have the time to just wait, pause a second and think, oh, actually they are different from me. It reminds me of my sister has 6 kids and she has one son who I think he's, well, I'm not going to assume he's melancholic, but he just strikes me as one who needs time. He needs time alone. So she, you know, has allowed him just whenever he needs to, he just goes to his bedroom and he just plays by himself. Like it's so powerful to see because it's like, No, you don't need to be around your siblings all the time. No, you know, it's not like he doesn't love his siblings. He loves them very much, but he just knows he needs the time. And I think with the temperaments, it's helpful to understand them because sometimes you don't have like words to put to your feelings or your emotions or anything like that. So like when you have this idea of, oh, this is how I respond to this, or this is how my child responds to this, it gives a better understanding of, okay, they just need that time or they need this. I love that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important too to recognize some of our own weaknesses. So in parenting, I had a very high choleric dad and a very high phlegmatic mother. Mm-hmm. And so you could see my dad was very structured and authoritative, down to 11 p.m. curfew until you were out of this house. Did not matter. All of my siblings, if you went to a movie with your friends and that movie was going to get over and you couldn't make it home in time, and you didn't drive, all your friends had to leave the movie early. He did not care if it was going to disrupt anyone else's lives. This was the rule.
It's hardcore.
Yes. My mom was so phlegmatic. It was just like, go with the flow. If this is our routine tonight, great. If this is our routine tonight, great. I don't think I ever really had a structured bedtime because my mom was in control of bedtime. And it was like, okay, whatever. We'll just adapt. Everything's fine. But recognizing that within yourself and then also your child. So if, for example, your go with the flow and your child's go with the flow, okay, maybe we need to make a little more effort to help them learn routine or to help them have some structure, because that might hinder them later on in their life if they don't know how to have structure. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of recognizing those things and how can we help them to grow, and knowing earlier what their temperament is and what our temperament is. So one more example, just really fast. I've had a lot of women come to me with this lately, not knowing their temperaments, not being familiar with these things. Their children are now in the space where they are in high school, about to graduate, or have graduated and now they're in college. Mm. And they're now recognizing their whole life, they have held them to this particular ideal or this particular standard because they're either melancholic or they're choleric, and now they've lost control. Their child wants to do what they want to do. And it is very stressful and challenging and emotional, because now they're reflecting on how could I maybe have done some things differently so that this isn't so difficult now? And how do we move forward so that I can help allow them to have their own life and be who God created them to be, while also rediscovering my identity separate from them?
Mm. Wow. What advice do you give to them? That's kind of like one of my last questions is like, when you have parents that feel frustrated and or just kind of at a loss of what to do with their children to help them, what advice would you give them to,
again,
to help?
I always say start with you and go to the Lord and reflect on yourself first, because we place expectations on other people based on how we think they should act, because we think that they should act the same way that we act. And so if we can go to ourselves first, not try to change them, we can't change who someone else is. We can't change their free will. That's not how the Lord treats us. We don't want to treat other people that way either. So start with you first, do the work yourself first. And after you have done a lot of that deep work, then we can start to say, okay, now what changes do I need to make in relation to my child? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I have on my website that people can download, excuse me, my voice is leaving, is a daily examine for every temperament. So the temperaments are broken down. If you don't do a daily examine, if you're not familiar with that, you don't have to do any kind of lengthy thing. You can download the sheets, and then you can go to your temperament and just look at the questions that are underneath trust. So for example, if I am a sanguine, the examples under trust are reflecting on my day. Lord, I often struggle to pause long enough in my day to listen to you. How can I trust in your voice more tomorrow? I love to be active and entertained. How in my day am I being distracted by being entertained and not paying attention to what you're asking me, or not paying attention to others? So the sanguine might be prone to, I want to have conversations with all these people, but I don't really care about what they have to say to me because I'm so focused on what I want to talk about. So just reflecting on some of those things and how they show up with your own kids Are you present with them or are you focused on what's going on with you? If you're choleric, are you taking time to listen to their needs or are you just focused on your own agenda?
Those are great questions. We will what's your website? And we can share that in our show.
Yeah. My website is www.kyliemhein.com. It's KYLIEMHEIN. There's also a decluttering guide based on your temperaments.
Oh.
And I was interviewed on a podcast for that. So that's kind of a fun one too. There's just a quick little handout, tips cool. for if you're decluttering your home, what to pay attention to based on your temperament.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, we had Julia Ubbenge. I don't know if you've heard of her. She has a Decluttering Your Heart and Your Home book, but we had her on the show a few weeks ago, and she talks about decluttering. But I love this idea of decluttering based upon your temperament. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And just even like I just love this conversation because, you know, this whole time you've just kind of discussed kind of these practical ideas about how we can help serve our families and our children, and also just how this is so like – it's so God-given. I don't know, just the idea that we have this opportunity to know ourselves and to know ourselves well, and then to be able to actually increase in virtue and character based upon knowing ourselves and our faults, our weaknesses, but then also our strengths. So that's so excellent. Do you have any recommendations, let's say if someone doesn't know their temperament, on where to go to? Do you have any of that? Or
yes, absolutely. There are a lot of temperaments assessments that you can take if you Google them, but I highly recommend the Metanoia Catholic one, not simply because I was trained through them. I've taken different ones and I think it is the most accurate. Okay. That being said, when you take it, you will get a percentage result. So again, you're going to have percentages for all of them. They don't add up to 100 and they're not supposed to. Okay. So sometimes people get thrown off by that. Mm-hmm. Your highest percentage is most likely your primary. Now, with any type of assessment, it's not perfect. No assessment is ever going to be perfect because your state of mind when you take it, if you just came home from work, your brain is in work mode. You're going to answer how you responded at work. If you're at home, you might answer how you would respond at home. So we're looking at a general overview. If you're not sure how to answer a question, think, how would I have responded to this when I was 12 years old? How would have I reacted when I was a teen? Because again, we've grown in virtue since then, hopefully. Yeah. And we might respond a little differently. So it's the natural inclination, how quickly we respond to something and how long that impression lingers.
That's great. Excellent. Oh, great. Okay. Anything else you'd like to share with our audience before we log off for this call?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is one of my absolute favorite things to talk about just because it's so fun and there's an entry point for everyone. Mm-hmm. But I just want to remind you that your unique identity is in Christ and none of this is to put you in a box. So if you're sanguine, that's a trigger for you. You don't like to be in a box. You are not in a box. You are called to grow in heroic virtue and you will. So this is just a way to help you identify your virtue struggle. And it has been so helpful in me identifying my personal virtue struggle. If we think of the four cardinal virtues, all of us will have one that we struggle more with our whole life. Same with theological virtues. So understanding that temperance is my virtue struggle, this will be something that I struggle with my whole life. And that's okay. That's recognizing where I need to go to the Lord more deeply and what kind of things I can bring to him for healing. So it's awareness. It is beautiful and it is worth taking the time to learn.
Oh, that's perfect. Wow. Thank you so much, Kylie, for being on our show and sharing this wonderful expertise that you have.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.